Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Yes, I want Dee Dee Bridgewater's email, ladies and gentlemen, because I heard her last night on this very radio station in New Orleans saying that she'd come down here last year to see some gig or something, and that the city was devastated by Hurricane Isaac. She said that on a radio station in New Orleans. Speaking of media absurdities, bringing back one more time once Los Angeles dog trainer corrections, a feature long shuttered on this broadcast, but this is irresistible. An article in the August 11th business section about Google Glass, that's not Ira's brother now, stop, said that Google co-founder Sergey Brin stole the show last year at the company's annual developers conference by skydiving onto the roof while wearing the goggles. In fact, he wore the device at the conference, but did not skydive onto the roof. All right, we're glad we made that clear from the Los Angeles dog trainer. For you, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the steady drip, 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 not to be confused with the leak in my roof here in the Crescent City, but the steady drip, 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 drip of information about the, until now, secret activities of the National Security Agency, legendarily known as No Such Agency, has continued this week. And typically, most of the information that came out Friday, the Friday of a the next to the last weekend of the summer, when all the serious people in Washington and New York are very busy pretending to, well, just having to, putting on their, yes, Al Sharpton is a serious person faces, and pretending to take Colin Powell seriously when he calls Bashar Assad a pathological liar. It was Assad that was at the UN claiming that Iraq had mobile bioweapons vans, right? Okay. Anyway, so maybe these bits of info regarding the secret thing have escaped your attention as a result. So, Deadline Washington, National Security Agency, according to the Wall Street Journal, has built a surveillance network that covers more Americans' internet communications than officials have publicly disclosed, current and former officials say. The system has the capacity to reach roughly 75% of all U.S. internet traffic in the hunt for foreign intelligence. In some cases, it retains the written content of emails sent between citizens within the U.S. and also filters domestic phone calls made with internet technology, i.e. Skype. The NSA's filtering is designed to look for communications that either originate in or end abroad or are entirely foreign but happen to be passing through the U.S. But officials say the system's broad reach makes it more likely that purely domestic communications are incidentally intercepted and collected. The programs are codenamed Blarney, Fairview, Oakstar, Lithium, and Stormbrew. Wouldn't you like to have the job of naming the NSA programs? Blarney! Blarney was established with AT&T, former officials say. AT&T declined to comment. The filtering takes place at more than a dozen locations at major internet junctions in the U.S., according to officials. Previously, any NSA filtering of this kind was largely believed to be happening near points where undersea or other foreign cables enter the country. So that would make it more easy or more likely for totally domestic communications to be captured. National security officials, National Security Agency officials deliberately overstepped their legal authority multiple times in the past decade, the agency acknowledged on Friday. The admission contradicts previous statements by lawmakers in the Obama administration that any privacy violations were unintentional. Quote, over the past decade, very rare instances of willful violations of NSA's authorities have been found, none under the FISA or Patriot Act, the agency said in a statement. NSA takes very seriously allegations of misconduct, blah, 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 blah. NSA has zero tolerance for willful violations of the agency's authorities, unquote. How do we know? Because they said so. According to Bloomberg News, the violations were of Executive Order 12333. Conspiracy fans, go to work. Yes, it's half of 666. What's your point? Which was issued by President Reagan in 1981. The admission comes days after the government released a 2011 FISA court opinion that concluded the NSA had unconstitutionally collected about 56,000 emails of Americans over a three-year period. The NSA said that incident and other violations were the result of technical glitches. This button does what again? For several years, the NSA unlawfully gathered tens of thousands of emails and other electronic communications between Americans as part of that secret, as revealed in that court opinion. The strongly worded opinion had the chief judge of the court expressing consternation at what he saw as a pattern of misleading statements by the government. No, we said the thing. And hinted the NSA possibly violated a criminal law against spying on Americans. Quote, for the first time, the government has now advised the court, this is the secret court, opinion just made public, that the volume and nature of the information it has been collecting is fundamentally different from what the court had been led to believe, said the then chief judge. The court, he said, is troubled that the government's revelations regarding NSA's acquisition of Internet transactions marked the third instance in less than 3 years in which the government has disclosed a substantial misrepresentation regarding the scope of a major collection program, the chief judge wrote in a scathing footnote. Like it's not hidden enough to be secret. It's got to be in a secret footnote for you. Two U.S. officials said one NSA analyst was disciplined in years past for using agency resources to track a former spouse. The officials spoke on condition of anonymity because they don't want to be killed. And the Obama administration has created a surveillance state on a scale not seen since the 1950s McCarthy era, according to Ladar Levison, founder of LavaBit, the encrypted email service used by NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, which Levison has now shut down. He closed down the service, posting a message about a government investigation that would force him to, quote, become complicit in crimes against the American people were he to stay in business. According to The Guardian, he's now stuck in a universe where he's not allowed to talk about what's going on, nor is he allowed to talk about what he's not allowed to talk about without facing charges of contempt of court. Shh. You didn't hear any of this. Because it's a secret. And now, ladies and gentlemen, would you let me read the trades for you? It's a copyrighted feature. From Current, the trade publication of Public Broadcasting, uncertainty about marijuana status casts doubt on underwriting by dispensaries. Ooh, I get high just thinking about it. Let me read it for you, would you? Thank you. I will. Public radio stations are divided over whether to accept underwriting donations from what could be an up-and-coming source of income, marijuana dispensaries. Twenty states in the District of Columbia have legalized medical marijuana. Last year, residents of Colorado and Washington State went further and legalized recreational use of cannabis. As dispensaries seek to build clientele, they're turning to public radio sponsorships to raise awareness, prompting stations to consider the possible pros and cons. Possession of marijuana remains illegal under federal law. That has prompted some public radio stations to keep their distance. Others are open to the prospect of making underwriting deals with dispensaries, including KVNF in Paonia, Colorado, where staffers are weighing the decision. Last month, underwriting director Amber McDaniel asked for advice from fellow public radio development staffers via an email forum. Most of the pro-dispensary staffers chose to email privately, she noted. There's still a lot of paranoia about it, she said. Her station first considered the issue a few years ago when only medical marijuana was legal in Colorado. But the issue came up again recently when a KVNF DJ told McDaniel that an alternative healing center was interested in donating in exchange for underwriting. McDaniel didn't realize the center is actually a dispensary until she researched the business. When Acme Healing Center opened 3 years ago, other businesses were reluctant to associate it with it, said David Nickum, Acme's general manager. Its first official promotion in any media outlet was on KBUT, a public radio station in Crested Butte, Colorado. In a perhaps unexpected example of public radio's halo effect working its magic, the spots lent the fledgling dispensary some legitimacy and, quote, opened doors, unquote, according to the general manager. People are more comfortable when they hear we're on a community radio station, Nickum said. The underwriting credits prompted a local dance collective to approach Acme as a sponsor as well. Acme and other dispensaries may face an uphill battle. KBUT general manager Eileen Hughes declined to even confirm to Current whether the station carried underwriting from dispensaries. Yet, while listening to KBUT's live broadcast while on hold, in the station's phone system, a reporter heard an announcer read a spot for Boomtown, another dispensary in Crested Butte. Other stations that have fielded requests from dispensaries have definitively turned down the offers. In Seattle, where medical marijuana has been legal since 1998, KUOW has heard from about half a dozen dispensaries, but the station has declined to accept the underwriting, citing federal law. The FCC has not made any decisions on the issue, according to a communications attorney in Washington. Most commercial broadcast stations have steered clear of selling advertising to dispensaries because promotion of illegal activity does not qualify as protected speech. But FCC guidelines for non-commercial stations are fuzzier, like the stations themselves. An underwriting credit is not technically promotional, really, but is an acknowledgement of receipt of a donation, said a communications attorney, and there's nothing that would prohibit a station from accepting a contribution from a legal business, such as a dispensary. Meanwhile, KVNF's McDaniel and her colleagues have yet to reach a decision. The board is waiting to take up the issue until a new general manager is installed at the station. That shouldn't take long. Hey, congratulations, NPR. You're getting a new one, too. McDaniel acknowledged she personally would support accepting the underwriting, but pointed out she's relatively new at the station, and she's only 29 years old. She doesn't want to alienate any listeners, quote, but it's not as if nobody smokes anymore, she said. It's very common these days, unquote.
Not news to you, is it?
Can't be news to you. Nor to me when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Hello, welcome to the show.
Well, I tried to run my game. She said, man, that's the same old thing I've heard before. And I'm too tired to go by your show. Yeah.
from New Orleans, Louisiana, just off the shores of Lake Pontchartrain. Just looking at those pumps, just within view of the pumps, spitting distance. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Wells are drying up and underwater tables are falling so fast in the Middle East and parts of India, China, and the U.S. that food supplies are seriously threatened. One of the world's leading resource analysts has warned, according to The Guardian. In a major new essay, Lester Brown, head of the Earth Policy Institute, claims that 18 countries, together containing half the world's population, are now overpumping their underground water tables to the point known as peak water, where they're not replenishing and where harvests are getting smaller each year. The situation is most serious in the Middle East. According to Brown, among the countries whose water supply has peaked and begun to decline, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. Well, nothing bad can happen there. By 2016, Saudi Arabia projects it will be importing some 15 million tons of wheat, rice, corn, and barley to feed its population. It's the first country to publicly project how aquifer depletion will shrink its grain harvest. The world, he says, is seeing the collision between the population growth and water supply at the regional level. For the first time in history, grain production is dropping in a geographic region with nothing in sight to arrest the decline. Well, at least pull it over. Because of the failure of governments in the region to mesh population and water policies, each day now brings 10,000 more people to feed and less irrigation water with which to feed them, Brown says. Syria's grain production peaked in 2002. Since then, it's dropped 30%. Iraq has dropped its grain production 33% since 2004. You're welcome. And production in Iran dropped 10% between 2007 and 2012. There's also concern about falling water tables in China, India, and the U.S., the world's three largest food-producing countries. In the United States, the irrigated area is shrinking in leading farm states with rapid population growth, such as California and Texas, as aquifers are depleted and irrigation water is diverted to cities, according to Lester Brown. Just fire up a doobie. 60 years ago this Monday, on August 19, 1953, modern Iranian history took a critical turn when a U.S. and British-backed coup overthrew the country's prime minister, democratically elected Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. The event's reverberations have haunted its orchestrators over the years. According to Foreign Policy magazine, contributing to the anti-Americanism that still pervades Iran, at least in the government circles, it's taken almost six decades for the U.S. intelligence community to acknowledge openly it, no, was behind the controversial overthrow. Published on the website of the National Security Archive, which obtained the document through the Freedom of Information Act, is a brief excerpt from The Battle for Iran, an internal report prepared in the mid-1970s by an in-house CIA historian. Yeah, you don't want those outhouse historians. They can't keep their... The document was first released in 1981, but most of it redacted for your viewing pleasure, including all of Section 3 entitled Covert Action, the part that describes the coup. Most of that section is still redacted. But this new version does formally make public for the first time, that Foreign Policy is aware of, the fact of the agency's participation. Quote, the military coup that overthrew Mossadegh was carried out under CIA direction as an act of U.S. foreign policy, unquote, according to the history. The risk of leaving Iran, quote, open to Soviet aggression compelled the United States in planning and executing TPAJAX, TPAJAX. That was the CIA's code name for the overthrow plot. What, Blarney wasn't available? It relied on local collaborators at every stage. It consisted of several steps, using propaganda to undermine Mossadegh politically, inducing the Shah to cooperate, bribing members of parliament, organizing the security forces, and organizing public demonstrations. The initial attempt failed, but after a mad scramble, the coup forces pulled themselves together and came through on their second try on August 19th. Why the CIA finally chose to own up to its role is unclear. CIA and British operatives have written books and articles on the operation. Scholars have produced many more books, but U.S. government classifiers, especially in the intelligence community, often have a different view on these matters. Shh, you didn't hear that. That didn't happen. You must have been smoking. The fight to eradicate polio has suffered a major setback in recent months as the Horn of Africa and Pakistan have both reported outbreaks of the virus so far this year. 120 cases have been reported in Kenya and Somalia. Another 24 cases of polio have been reported in North Waziristan. That's the Pakistani tribal region where local leaders banned vaccinations in the aftermath of the Osama bin Laden raid because CIA operatives looking for bin Laden were masquerading as vaccination health workers. That pesky CIA. And from Al Jazeera America, not seen in your area, the U.S. Department of Defense has been urged to rescreen all Guantanamo prisoners to determine whether heavy doses of an anti-malarial drug administered at Gitmo between January 2002 and mid-2005 caused brain damage. The drug, mefloquine, was tagged last month with an FDA warning of possible side effects that range from depression and anxiety to psychosis and even suicide. Dr. Remington Nevin, a former U.S. Army major leading researcher into the effects of anti-malarial drugs, said the military should review 7 prisoner suicides at Gitmo over the past decade to determine if their deaths may be linked to mefloquine, a controversial medication known to cause severe neurological and psychological disorders. Well, then why not give it to the detainees? The FDA's updated warning states, it's a black box warning, the agency's strongest neurological symptoms such as dizziness or vertigo, tinnitus, ow, and loss of balance have been reported. Psychiatric symptoms ranging from anxiety, paranoia, and depression to hallucinations and psychotic behavior can occur with mefloquine use. The recommended dose for an adult is 250 milligrams. Each prisoner transferred to Gitmo during that period was administered about 5 times that dose. The full treatment dose for someone who has already contracted malaria within 24 hours of being transferred to Gitmo, whether or not that detainee had the disease, according to a military document. The Pentagon said someone made a decision to presumptively treat each arriving Guantanamo detainee for malaria to prevent the possibility of having mosquito-borne spread from an infected individual to uninfected individuals in the Guantanamo population. The Centers for Disease Control makes no mention of malaria in its travel advice for extended stays in Cuba, however. Maybe they don't have it there. Maybe Fidel confiscated it. I don't know. A Freedom of Information Act request has been filed with the Pentagon and the U.S. Southern Command to discover who made the decision to administer treatment doses of mefloquine to prisoners without medical evaluation. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know, because we're a nation of, what is it, laws again? Yeah, I think so. But let's apologize with the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Didn't have them last week, so it's a double dose for your listening pleasure. Deadline Taipei, a celebrated Taiwanese film director, apologized for allowing an award-winning Chinese photographer to use false papers to gain access to a naval base in southern Taiwan while scouting sites for a new feature film. Niu Chen-zhi apologized for his negligence in not paying attention to government regulations barring mainland Chinese from entering sensitive military establishments. Jennifer Lopez, I think we had that, Jennifer Lopez apologizing. If we didn't, we should have. Survivors of an infamous dormitory school who were, I had that. I'll just be reviewing these now. Did I share with you the Russell Simmons apology for a parodied video of a Harriet Tubman in a sex tape? On this weekend, maybe I should remind you of it anyway. The clip features an actress portraying Tubman having sex with her white slave master as someone films it so the abolitionist can bribe her boss. Tubman spent nearly 30 years as a slave before escaping in 1849. Simmons, founder of Def Jam Records, says he can now understand why so many people are upset. San Francisco Giant fan apologizing for throwing a banana during a game against Baltimore, claiming it was not a racially motivated insult to Orioles star Adam Jones. You heard that one? Mexico's Aeromexico airline and its ad agency apologizing for a producer's casting call requesting that only light-skinned people apply as actors for a television commercial. Yemen. Yemen apologized, ladies and gentlemen. Yemen's government has apologized to southern secessionists over a war launched against them by the previous president in hopes of bringing them back to talks about the future of the country on the Arabian Peninsula. The government statement read on state television, the best television, and the only television, said it was apologizing on behalf of the previous Yemeni leadership to those affected by the 1994 civil war in the south and to Shiite Houthi rebels in the northern province of Sa'ada. It said the wars and subsequent conflicts led to extensive damage and historical and moral mistakes. So we'll be seeing apologies for the Syrian civil war in, I guess, about 20 years. Polish photographer Łukasz Jigielski has apologized for conducting a photo shoot with a half-naked model at the Jewish cemetery in Chechnya, Poland. Topless shoot at Headstone Yard. Jigielski explained that he wanted to draw attention to the neglected cemetery in the southern Poland town. It's forgotten, he said. The model posed against the headstones naked from the waist up with a necklace bearing a large cross hanging between her breasts. If I offended anyone, I deeply apologize, Jigielski told a local television station. This was not the intention of the session. Yeah, we know what the intention of the session was, babe. We're not under any misapprehension. The University of Michigan is reinviting Alice Walker to speak at a future campus event with apologies after a previous speaking engagement for the Pulitzer Prize-winning author was reportedly canceled amid donor concerns over her statements critical of Israel. Walker reported by her blog that the university's Center for the Education of Women recently withdrew its invitation to speak at the center's 50th anniversary celebration. That followed donors withdrawing support for the center's celebration based on Walker's comments regarding Israel, according to an agent's letter she quotes in the blog entry. Never quote an agent, babe. Australia has apologized to Solomon Islands Prime Minister Gordon Darcy Lilo after a lapse in protocol saw him swabbed for explosives at an airport in Brisbane. Mr. Lilo was stopped at a security checkpoint and asked to submit to the random test. Solomon Islands media reports a standoff ensued when Mr. Lilo refused. Security screening has proved a testing issue for Australia's relations with smaller Pacific neighbors, since former Papua New Guinea Prime Minister Sir Michael Somar objected to removing his shoes for an X-ray check. The Foreign Affairs spokeswoman said the department regretted any embarrassment or inconvenience caused to the Solomon Islands Prime Minister. A former official in a Kansas City suburb said he didn't mean to offend anyone when he said having a Walmart move into another nearby suburb would attract, quote, a different class of people, unquote, who would not be concerned about maintaining their homes and would drive down property values. Former Fairway City Councilman John Ridenour apologized after several citizens criticized him at a council meeting Tuesday for the comments he made in a letter to his neighbors about the new Walmart store, which is scheduled to move into Mission, Kansas, about 2 miles from Fairway. At least they didn't name it Rough. A Twitter post had turned into a media firestorm for Michael Grunwald, a national correspondent at Time Magazine, who you heard on this broadcast recapitulating his pretty legendary Washington Post five-part series about the Army Corps of Engineers a few years ago. Grunwald wrote, quote, in his Twitter feed, I can't wait to write a defense of the drone strike that takes out Julian Assange, unquote. In a statement, a Time spokesperson wrote, Michael Grunwald posted an offensive tweet from his personal Twitter account that is in no way representative of Time's views. He regrets having tweeted it, and he removed it from his feed. He tweeted himself several times afterward, noting his remark was dumb, and he apologized. I don't need a boss to tell me it was dumb. I apologize. Good night, everyone. Michael Grunwald. You know, of course, that Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, woke up. It was a apologized for in his statement to the judge for his role in releasing all that information to WikiLeaks, and the U.S. soldier who ran amok last year killing 16 Afghan villagers, not soldiers, has apologized for the massacre, calling it an act of cowardice. Staff Sergeant Robert Bales was testifying at his sentencing hearing. He said he had been a mass of fear and bravado at the time of the attack, just about a year and a half ago. I'm truly, truly sorry to those people whose families got taken away. Sorry isn't just good, just isn't good enough, he says, but I am sorry. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
We spotted the ocean at the head of the trail. Where are we going? So far away. Somebody told me this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe. Walk on the ocean, step on the storm. Smile just the same. Seemed late already. Forgotten we came. Walk on the ocean. Step on the storm. Flesh becomes water. Blood becomes born. Walk on.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. One of the most senior figures involved in planning the Rio de Janeiro 2016 Summer Olympics, has resigned, adding to uncertainty over the city's ability to deliver on promises made during its bid. Hey, they're just promises. Marcelo Fort, who headed the Olympic Public Authority, or APO, the body responsible for coordinating the efforts of the Brazilian government and the state and city of Rio, handed a letter of resignation to the office of the Brazilian president. Force hasn't commented on his resignation. A newspaper reported he quit because he faced resistance and grew concerned that the Olympic Public Authority was being marginalized. Know the feeling, babe. Brazil's sports ministry said in an email statement, it has always maintained good relations, appreciation, and respect for Marcelo Force. A replacement will be chosen by the president's office. The resignation came 2 weeks before a visit to Rio by inspectors from the International Olympic Committee, including two candidates vying to become president of the sports body in elections next month. Hey, who knew? The IOC's having an election. Now I care. Where's the campaign? Where are the ads? The IOC didn't respond to a request for comment on the move. His departure marks the latest change among leaders of Rio's efforts to stage the Games for the first time in South America. The 2016 Organizing Committee, a private group responsible for planning and running the event, has had two chief executive officers, three chief operating officers, and four marketing directors since they secured the rights in 2009. The Games have come under scrutiny following delays in publishing the budget. Almost as many chief executives as NPR. Meanwhile, people in the West proposing a boycott of the Sochi, Russia Winter Olympics due to Russia's new anti-gay laws should seek psychiatric help. That's according to the leader of a pro-Kremlin think tank in New York. I think that people who propose these kinds of ideas, they need to go examine their head at a psychiatrist, said Andranik Migranyan, the director of the Institute for Democracy and Cooperation. Because one must be absolutely crazy to propose these kind of ideas, because the Olympics have nothing to do with the laws the Duma passed. Unquote. And Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed a decree banning demonstrations and rallies in Sochi for 2.5 months around the Winter Olympics. The decree, published in the government newspaper, says all gatherings, rallies, demonstrations, marches, and pickets that are not part of the Olympics or Paralympics will be prohibited from January 7th to March 21. So if you want to have a demonstration, I guess, come in a wheelchair. The decree also orders other measures aimed at tightening security in Sochi, such as restricting vehicle entry. Sounds like a fun place to go. Government-imposed protest bans across entire cities where Olympics are held are unusual. And Putin's decree could be aimed at heading off demonstrations against Russia's ban on so-called gay propaganda. Gays in wheelchairs. Hey, we're here for the Paralympics.
The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, John. You didn't get to finish the whole flourish? Next year. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that probably the last, certainly trumpeted as the last, maybe even tromboned as the last of the releases of the Nixon tapes came out this week. There was some coverage of the conversation between Nixon and the then Soviet Premier Leonid Brezhnev in the Oval Office, which seemed friendlier than the public rhetoric the two leaders were exchanging at the time. That was big news. And also reports surfaced in the New York Times and elsewhere that the president, after delivering a Watergate-related speech the night that he had to fire his two chief aides, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, he received phone calls of support from George H.W. Bush, Bush Sr., as we're now calling him inaccurately, and from Ronald Reagan. And apparently that's going to be the last release of the White House tapes. But fortunately, today marks the release of another one of the tapes of Nixon in heaven.
So, good coverage of your conversation with Brezhnev.
Yep. And I used to lead up that Cold War crap.
Well, it's good for us.
No, but...
I mean, anything that focuses on your diplomatic side...
Sure.
But isn't focusing on your, you know,
yep,
the...
Yep. Hating the blacks and the Jews side.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
Well, of course, that's the way the media would put
that's,
it.
That's right. That's right.
Because when you get past all the Mexicans and the Asians and all the rest that they hire to look good for the diversity crowd...
Sure.
It's still run by Jews.
The media.
Of course the media. Jesus, Haldeman. Living up here just completely destroyed your short-term memory.
Well, they say in the orientation you don't really need much short-term memory up here.
Yeah. And
well, that's just because it's so damn boring. I mean, what did we do yesterday?
We sat here on your cloud and we talked.
Yeah. And what are we doing next week?
I'm going to go visit Ehrlichman and you, I guess.
Sitting right here dictating my next book.
Right. Yeah. I forgot to ask you. How were you able to get a publishing deal?
Oh, we don't have a deal for this one. But if I don't write it, then I have to sit and talk to Henry or somebody.
Sure.
And,
now, about getting to Reagan.
Well, as I say, yeah. I just wanted him to be aware that mm-hmm. this tape had come out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he ever knew that he was being recorded.
Well, we certainly didn't tell him at the time.
No, of course not.
So, unless he used his common sense.
No, I know.
And assumed that since we were taping everything else, we were probably taping him too.
Yeah, well, let's just assume that they didn't know.
Sure.
So I thought, you know, just as a courtesy.
Yeah, no, of course. And we did try to make contact with his people.
He has people up here.
You have me.
No, I know, but...
I think it's fair to say that he was in a better negotiating position coming in than you were.
No, well, I know that. Yeah. I mean, this isn't exactly the best cloud in the place.
No. After all. No, it's not.
Not that it's not their right to give me any accommodation that, you know, they see fit.
No, that's right.
They have that right to... Of course, you don't see Henry or any of the Harvard crowd with a cloud like this.
No, that's right. That's right.
Of course, if there was any place that I should have expected was run by the Jews.
Oh, of course.
It would be this place.
Well, they kind of invented it.
Yeah. So, what did Reagan's people say?
Well, they said he appreciated knowing that you cared enough to let me contact them.
Mm-hmm.
They said that he clearly recalled that conversation.
Well, I mean...
No, well...
You know,
no, I mean...
we all know that they couldn't...
No, I
mean, all due respect
sure,
and all, but...
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. But your phlebitis hasn't kicked up since you got here, so maybe...
Sure. But that's a physical thing.
Well, anyway, they also said that he was being advised that it probably wasn't a good idea for the two of you to be seen together.
Yeah.
Even here.
Uh-huh.
Not yet.
Yeah, I see.
But...
Well, of course, they've still got the Mount Rushmore campaign going, don't they?
It kind of seems to have trailed off a little recently.
So, then it's just... What? And trying to get him on the $10 bill, for Christ's sake?
Last time I heard, they were going for the 100.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Did you let Brezhnev know that tape was being put out?
I talked to his people.
Because, you see...
They appreciated the courtesy, mm-hmm. but they said he's kind of tied up at the moment with his English lessons, so...
Well, let me say this.
Mm-hmm.
It's damn lucky that they've run out of tapes to release, Haldeman. I'll tell you that.
Yes, sir. Why in particular?
Because given the response,
mm-hmm. yeah,
I've just about run out of courtesy.
Yeah,
you see.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, I know. Well, I'm I am late for bocce ball.
Yeah. Sure.
I've been cheated. Been mistreated.
One more apology of the week, ladies and gentlemen. I neglected to bring to your attention previously. New Zealand's Foreign Affairs Minister Murray McCulley has apologized for a series of tainted milk products recently shipped from New Zealand to China. How about that for a switcheroo? At a news conference in Beijing, McCulley tried to allay fears about the quality of New Zealand's milk products after 42 tons of milk powder were quarantined by Chinese officials. How about that for a switcheroo? Fonterra, the producer of the powder, has been repeatedly embarrassed in recent months by shipments of its products caught up by Chinese food standards. The bacteria that can cause botulism was found in its supply chain, the company announced. Milk powder exported to China in May was found to have elevated nitrate levels. You don't want those, especially at night. China ordered a recall this month of lactoferrin made by a rival New Zealand company for the same reasons, according to the state news agency. So, yeah, kind of a cute little switcheroo there on the news. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe. Meter.
Our friend the Atom, Addy, is on a well-deserved summer vacation. So here, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Atom. A nuclear expert has told the BBC that he believes the current water leaks at Fukushima are much worse than the authorities have stated. Michael Schneider is an independent consultant who's previously advised the French and German governments. He says water is leaking out all over the site and there are no accurate figures for radiation levels. The chairman of Japan's nuclear authority says he fears there will be further leaks. TEPCO admitted around 300 tons of highly radioactive water had leaked from a storage tank on the site. The energy watchdog in Japan raised the incident level from 1 to 3 on the international scale that measures the severity of atomic accidents. This is an acknowledgement the power station was in its greatest crisis since the reactors melted down in 2011. But some nuclear experts are concerned the problem is a good deal worse than either TEPCO or the Japanese government admit. They're worried about the enormous quantities of water used to cool the reactor cores, which are now being stored on site. Some 1,000 tanks have been built to hold the water. These are believed to be at around 85% of their capacity. Every day, an extra 400 tons of water are being added. The quantities of water they are dealing with are absolutely gigantic, says Schneider. What is worse is the water leakage everywhere else, not just from the tanks, he says. It's leaking out from the basements. It's leaking out from the cracks all over the place. Nobody can measure that. It is much worse than we've been led to believe. Much worse. He is the lead author for the World Nuclear Industry Status Reports. And the head of Japan's Nuclear Regulation Authority, Shunichi Tanaka, appeared to give credence to those concerns, saying he feared there would be further leaks. It's not over by a long shot, says Dr. Ken Buesler, a senior scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. Chernobyl was in many ways, he says, a one-week fire explosive event, nothing with the potential of this right on the ocean. There's no way to really contain all this radioactive water on site. Once it gets into the groundwater, like a river flowing to the sea, you can't really stop a groundwater flow. You can pump out water, but how many tanks can you keep putting on site, he asks. Several scientists also raised concerns about the vulnerability of the huge amount of stored water on site to another earthquake. Efforts to use a chemical barrier to prevent sea contamination have not worked. Our biggest concern right now, says Dr. Buesler, is if some of the other isotopes, such as strontium-90, which tend to be more mobile, get through these sediments in the groundwater. They're entering the oceans at levels that then will accumulate in seafood and cause new health concerns. Schneider says the spent fuel rods that are being cooled and stored in water pools contain far more radioactive cesium than was emitted during the explosion at Chernobyl. There is absolutely no guarantee that there isn't a crack in the walls of the spent fuel pools. If salt water gets in, the steel bars would be corroded. It would basically explode the walls, and you cannot see that. You can't get close enough to the pools, he said. He concludes, the Japanese have a problem asking for help. It is a big mistake. They badly need it. This water thing, not enough in Saudi Arabia, using too much to cool Fuk, using plenty more for fracking. You got any on you? You got any water on you? TEPCO, don't worry, though. TEPCO has sent a group of engineers to the U.S. to get training in how to handle a nuclear disaster from Hanford Engineer Works That's right. They're doing the nuclear decommissioning at the former plutonium plant in Hanford, Washington. The organization may be able to provide the Fuch team with an alternative method of sealing off the reactors, known as cocooning, which could reduce the estimated cost of the operation. Meanwhile, at Hanford, workers up there were evacuated and other workers were ordered to take cover Wednesday night after an unusual radiation reading was detected near one of the tanks. The Department of Energy said a transfer system may have leaked radioactive waste. Nothing to worry about. It's Hanford. They do it right. News of our friend, clean, cheap, safe to hang the meter, our friend, the Atom. A former Bush administration official this week lent his support to the super secret work by the National Security Agency. He said, you can't be worried about the, legal niceties and the Fourth Amendment and such, because if you do, you're going to lose time and you're not going to be able to catch terrorists in time. Who said that? You know who. You.
He just wrote and ran. Torture memo man. He went and banned the band. Torture memo man. You got you some detainees. You don't know what to do. Do you read them their Miranda rights or cover them with poo? Are you doing proper through and through? There's only one guy to call. The one to ask is you.
That is a bad mother.
Who is you? He's in that secret clan.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He had a clever plan. Torture memo man. Oh, you've got some evildoers, and they will not say boo. A little pain and torment might change their point of view. But before you waterboard them, you wonder, could they sue? One guy has got the answer.
Shut your mouth. I'm talking about Donny.
Who is you?
He just wrote and ran.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He went and banned the band.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. All these laws and treaties. You want something new. This war may last forever. You need to turn the screw. He's teaching law at Berkeley. He'll drop the other shoe. The Bill of Rights expired. The one who knows is you.
Who is you?
Catch him if you can. Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He just banned the band.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Mm-hmm.
bringing the wow back to radio. This has been Le Show. And that's going to put the cap on it for this week. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network, around the world, I said that, up and down the east coast of North America, via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 9.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through Sideshow Network, iTunes, and SoundCloud. And it'd be just like keeping everything secret if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. You didn't hear this, did you? A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. I'll see you on Twitter. I'm the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of the Change is Hard Radio Network. So long from New Orleans.